What up and happy holidays, everybody. It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. Hope you all are enjoying your holiday week. It's been a profoundly strange and challenging week for the NBA, even more so than last week. More than 80 players, as I record this, are in protocols, and NBA rosters are now filled with G League call-ups and retired players. Joe Johnson is back. He's 40. Lance Stephenson is back. He hadn't played in almost 3 years. Isaiah Thomas is back. And to clarify, that's the younger one, though give it some time. The older Isaiah Thomas might end up getting signed too, the way things are going. More games have been postponed, and as I record this, it is still unclear if all the Christmas Day games will be played or who will play in them, frankly, because the Nets' three stars are all in protocols again as I record this. Luka Doncic of the Mavs is in protocols. Trae Young of the Hawks, Giannis, all of those guys should be playing on Christmas. I don't know if we will see any of them. In the midst of all of this, Commissioner Adam Silver went on ESPN with Malika Andrews, had some really interesting things to say, including, and I thought this was the most provocative part, a statement that the virus is here to stay and we're going to have to learn to live with that. That was striking to me. And so to help me sort through all of this, I wanted to bring on Zach Binney. He's a sports epidemiologist at Oxford College of Emory University in Atlanta. I've spoken with Zach many times over the last 2 years about the pandemic and the NBA's handling of it. He's always got great insights. On balance, the NBA's done well, but Zach has some concerns, as I do as well, as to where things are. I promise we're going to get back to more basketball talk on the Friday edition soon, but in light of everything going on and the fact that the basketball, frankly, doesn't feel that relevant to me right now. I mean, the rosters are scrambled. The results feel meaningless. I thought it was more important to bring on another expert on the pandemic and discuss where things are headed. And Zach always has great information. Before we get to that, a quick reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my conversation with Zach Binney is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to be joined by Zach Binney. Zach, welcome. Been a while. Good to see you, although, as always, not under the circumstances. If I need to talk to you, it's probably because things have gone awry somewhere, but good to see you and speak again anyway.
Yes, good to see you, Howard, and sorry I have to see you, Howard.
One day we will end this cycle of codependency, of sports writer needing information about sports epidemiology, but we're not there
yet.
We're
just going to go out and have steaks, Howard. I swear, you're going to be in Atlanta covering the Hawks. We're going to go to the game. We're going to have some steaks. It's going to be great.
I would love to do that. I'll come down, do a huge feature on Trae Young. You and I can go out unmasked because life will be normal.
That's right. Sounds good.
So speaking of normal, the message that I seem to get, I think, from Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, the other night on ESPN, which is why I wanted to speak with you, were some, I think, not so subtle messages about a return to normalcy. And so this is where I want to start with our discussion today, Zach. When you and I have done podcasts in the past, we have always dealt a lot heavily in the facts and science and epidemiology and all this stuff, but I want to start with more of a speculative angle here, because Adam said a lot to ESPN the other night, and the thing he said to me that was most fascinating, I think, is not getting enough attention, because I think he was hinting at where the league is going, and maybe where sports is going, and maybe where society is going. He said, in explaining why they were not going to pause the season, he told Malika Andrews that he had trouble coming up with the logic for doing so, and then he said this, quote, "This virus will not be eradicated, and we're going to have to learn to live with it." He said later in that interview, maybe we, the NBA, can demonstrate that there's a way that people can move forward, again, recognizing that this virus, unfortunately, isn't going anywhere, and it's just going to become part of our lives for the foreseeable future. Zach, again, we usually deal, when I speak with you, in facts and science. I want to deal in interpretation and speculation, because to me, that was Adam Silver saying, we're coming out of this. We are preparing to move on to something resembling normalcy, where the virus is not controlling the way the NBA operates. And I'm not sure how to feel about that as of right now. What did you make of those comments and what that may indicate about where the league is headed?
Well, look, I haven't spoken to Adam Silver, but I think he gave voice to what a lot of people are feeling, even a lot of people in the public health community. Look, as an epidemiologist, I would love to say we're going to be able to eradicate this virus or have a zero COVID. We have managed to accomplish that with exactly one virus in the history of humanity, that is smallpox. It is gone. We are very close with polio. That's been set back a little bit by the pandemic of reducing vaccination efforts, but we've almost gotten rid of polio. COVID is not going to be one of those. There are too many cases. That said, that is not an excuse to give up on containing it. What we want to focus on, and what I think the path forward is going to be, is effective but not disruptive steps, meaning vaccines and boosters. They're not disruptive, right? Let's get as many people vaccinated and boosted as possible to reduce the number of bad outcomes from the virus. That's going to be one of the main ways that we live with it. The other thing we want to do is we want to keep an eye on healthcare capacity. One of the things with Omicron is it seems to be in the countries where it was detected earliest, not necessarily where it hit earliest, but where it was detected earliest, seemed to cause a spike in cases that wasn't followed by quite as much of a spike in hospitalizations or deaths as we saw with earlier variants. How that's being interpreted is that it's less severe. And hopefully that is going to turn out to be the case. I think we're going to see that in a few weeks in the US, whether that is true or not, because we're going to have a huge spike in cases. And the question is that going to lead to a huge spike in hospitalizations, a small spike in hospitalizations, or not much of one? And we're going to really have to wait and see on that. The big concern would be if we have a lot of cases, even if very few of them result in severe disease, that is a very high absolute number of hospitalizations and deaths that we're going to have to deal with in a very short amount of time. That is dangerous to an already overstretched, overtaxed healthcare system, right? If you want to think of it in basketball terms, and I feel bad digging on Ben Simmons again, because God knows he's been dug on enough, but he's just the example that comes to mind, yeah. Right? If you give Ben Simmons 100 three-point attempts a game, he's going to lay a lot of points on, right? And that's what Omicron can still do. We don't want to give it that many chances, even if any one chance isn't particularly likely to go in. So we want to be a little conscious of that. But I think Adam Silver is absolutely right that we are going to need to find a way to live with the virus, and that is to get as many people vaccinated and boosted as possible. It is to have rapid tests, cheap rapid tests available on demand for when you're going in to high-risk situations like large indoor gatherings or any gathering with a high-risk person. And it's going to be continued indoor masking wherever that's feasible. Right. That is in many settings like grocery stores and airports. That's not that big a deal. Yeah. I think people really tend to focus on the times when it can be disruptive, like schools. I teach at a college and I teach a lot of ESL students, English as a second language students. I agree. Masks make it harder for me to teach. They make it harder for the students to learn. We do need to balance those risks and benefits. But there are some other common sense situations where we can be doing more indoor masking, where I think if people sat down and thought about it for a second, they'd realize it's really not a big burden. So let's find those effective but not burdensome interventions and let's move forward with those. I think the NBA is going to try to do something similar.
I would just say that I think, and this will be unnecessarily mean during the holiday season, I think Omicron's shooting percentage is still better than Ben Simmons's, no matter how many shots you give him, unless it's in an empty gym.
You said it, not me. Don't come at me, Sixers fans. Go at Howard.
Oh, and they will. Actually, you know, it's funny. There was a time when if I went at Ben Simmons or made a crack about Ben Simmons, the Sixers fans would be coming at me hard on Twitter. Now they have turned so hard on Ben Simmons that they, you know, it's fine. Like there's nothing you and I could say that they wouldn't have said 10 degrees worse of. So
that's a good point.
The fascinating thing about Adam's message the other day to me, Zach, was this, that the NBA has seen itself, I think rightly at times, as a leader on COVID and COVID measures and everything. But people who have been opposed to COVID safety measures from the start, lockdowns, social distancing, mask vaccinations, people who have been opposed to all that have been saying the kind of thing that Adam just said, which is, we just got to learn to live with it. Now, it's different today in late 2021 than it was in March of 2020, because we do have vaccinations, or we do have vaccines and boosters, and we have the antiviral pills that are coming soon, and we are in a different place. So it's fair for him to say it, but I saw immediately on Twitter that all the people who, there was a lot of this I told you so stuff from people who were opposed to all mitigation measures in the first place, saying, aha, this is what we've been telling you all along. He is saying it at a different time. So I think it's important to note that. And I don't think that Adam Silver shares the views of the people who were saying that. And the NBA is still strongly in favor of, as Adam said, still, he was urging everybody to get vaccinated. He's urging people to still be careful, wear masks when possible, all that stuff. But it does seem like the start of a philosophical shift, a significant philosophical shift for the league. Do you think that you, so you've already weighed in on the idea that, yes, he's right. On some level, just scientifically, we are going to have to learn to live with it. It's not going away. That is just scientific fact, it seems. But what does living with it, do you think, look like, at least in the near term here? Because if we just rush into, oh, we're just going to have to live with it, normalcy, throw away your masks, burn them in a you know, pyre outside your front lawn, and just pretend as if this never happened, I imagine that probably would not go well. For the NBA specifically, and maybe for sports in general, what do you think this inflection point is? How close to normalcy can they return to? What does that mean for testing of players? What does that mean for, we're seeing guys still quarantined right now, and of course this week is a disaster for the NBA on a competitive and entertainment level, because rosters are destroyed. So they're still adhering to their own protocols, even as Adam seems to indicate that he would like to move away from them. What do you make of this particular inflection point? What does normalcy look like? How soon do you think the NBA could get there without jeopardizing safety and health and safety of its own people?
Right. I think we are in a major philosophical shift, Howard. I think you've put it very well there, and you've hit the nail on the head. Are we moving from where all of our efforts are focused on containing the virus? We now have a lot of interventions and a lot of knowledge we did not have in March 2020. We are not in March 2020. Let's just list off a few of the things we have, okay? We have just this week two oral treatments for those who are infected with COVID-19 that are likely to be approved by the FDA. I believe they've approved Pfizer's actually shortly before we started talking, and Merck's is probably coming soon. We have vaccines that we know do a lot to reduce your individual risk of severe disease. We know that it transmits mostly indoors and not outdoors. There's no reason to restrict outdoor activities, even with Omicron, that I've seen, none whatsoever. We know that wearing masks indoors helps. In some situations, that can be a little disruptive, like schools. In other situations, if you sit down and think about it for a few seconds, it's really not a big deal. I'm going to be wearing masks to the grocery store, for example, I think in perpetuity. There's no reason really not to. Forget COVID. I don't want to get a cold or anything like that, right? Why not? It's not a big deal. Probably should have been doing that for a while, okay? So we have a lot of things that work. We also know that ventilation is important, indoor ventilation. We're learning to open windows when we can, maybe get air purifiers, HEPA filters, things like that can really help prevent the spread of the virus. So we have all of this knowledge. All of that is leading us to not need to go back to anything like March 2020. And I don't see sports leagues shutting down for any appreciable period of time. I know the NHL kind of went on a pause until after Christmas. I don't really think that's going to help. And I think Adam Silver is right to resist shutting down, because unless you're going to shut down for 2 or 3 months until this wave is over, I just don't know what shutting down for a week or two is really going to do. The best arguments for it that I can think of are, one, it can serve as kind of a circuit breaker, a momentum killer. It's like taking a timeout, right? In basketball, when your opponent is on a 10-0 run against you, you just want to take a pause and reset. The problem is you're going to be coming back into a situation with still a lot of cases in a week or two. So what's going to be different? What's going to be better? a pause without a change in protocols is going to be worthless. So are you going to be testing more to identify cases and contain outbreaks immediately? Are you going to be going back to an indoor mask mandate? What are you going to do? A shutdown isn't worth anything without something else. So that's really my worry about a shutdown and why I wouldn't really focus on it so much. What we do want to be focusing on are, again, those effective but low cost, low disruption interventions that we can continue for a long period of time. Moving meetings virtual, going to indoor masking, vaccinations and boosters spread as widely as possible. Those are all really good things. The testing, that's the tricky one, right? Because if you are doing widespread testing, you're identifying a lot of cases from a sports league's perspective. Now, that can be good or bad depending on your goal. Is your goal containing the virus, or is your goal to play games? Those goals are in tension with one another, right? You want to identify cases if your goal is to contain the virus. But if you identify a case, you have to hold them out for a few days until they test negative. That can knock people off rosters. That can lead to game postponements, as we've seen. So leagues are facing a philosophical question here of what their goal is and what they want to do when those two possible goals come in tension with one another. Look, as an epidemiologist and a public health professional, I would love it if everyone's sole focus were on controlling Omicron. I don't think it can be. I think we need to focus on effective and less disruptive interventions. And I do find it difficult to get too upset at pro leagues dialing back on testing when they are a highly vaccinated and hopefully soon to be highly boosted population where bad outcomes are not impossible, but are unlikely. And when you look at other workplaces, let's think of the NBA as a workplace, and let's consider what the rest of society is doing. It's hard to hold the NBA and the NFL and the NHL to so much higher standards when it comes to testing, because we're missing cases left and right everywhere else.
Yeah.
Now, I would love to do more to bring the floor up to the ceiling rather than bring the ceiling down to the floor, but it's hard for me to get too upset about leagues saying, look, most of our cases are asymptomatic. We would prefer not to find them because we're conceding and we're waving the white flag and we're saying Omicron is so transmissible, even in vaccinated but not boosted populations, which is what the NBA primarily is, that we just think we're not going to be able to contain it. You know, we're going to do what we can with minimal disruption, but we're not going to be postponing games left and right. I understand the argument for that, even if I don't love it as an epidemiologist.
Yeah. So let me pick up on that because it's interesting. When Malika Andrews at ESPN asked Adam Silver about a change in protocols, about allowing asymptomatic players to potentially just play through or test out of protocols faster, return to play faster, Adam did provide some really, really interesting information. Among players and coaches who got three shots, the two, you know, vaccinations, you know, who did not go Johnson & Johnson, right? Who got, you know, Pfizer or Moderna, and then got a booster. Anybody with three shots in the NBA's world, he says a very small number of them have been the breakthrough cases. And they've been generally asymptomatic or very mild symptoms. So even the NBA is a test group, and that's not just the players, it's coaches too. So it's older people as well. That's a pretty good sign that if you are vaxxed and boosted, two-shot vaxxed and boosted, that you probably are not going, even if you get a breakthrough, you might test positive, but it's not going to make you very ill, if at all. So that seemed very encouraging, both from an NBA standpoint and just more broadly for all of us. And he said, he again noted that in the NBA, around 97% of the players are vaccinated, and of that group, about 65% are boosted, and they have active discussions with the union to try to get more of the players boosted. So again, the NBA seems like on balance doing the right things and being as aggressive as possible, short of a mandate, which, you know, if the union's not going to agree to, and they haven't, then you can't, there's only so much you can do. It's all collectively bargained. So that all seems encouraging, and it seems like that does provide an entry or an opportunity for them to do what you were just saying, Zach, to either cut back on testing. They're going to ramp up testing in the wake after Christmas because they had already planned to do that, I guess, because they figure people are seeing families and stuff. But would it be wise, would it be reasonable for the NBA, especially as a business matter? Because again, this week is awful for the league. Let me be completely blunt about it. The rosters they're putting out there, the players that they're like Joe Johnson, who I think is like 73 years old now. He might only be 40. Joe Johnson, formerly of your Atlanta Hawks, is
no, as a Hawks fan, I read that tweet that he was going to be playing this week. And I said, I just about fell off my couch.
And listen, like, it's fun for all of us who are NBA fans and NBA media to see some of these retired vets come back. Guys who have been playing either overseas or maybe in the big three or whatever. But this is not a good sign for the NBA. And maybe it's not justified anymore. Maybe the NBA has, you know, is being overly cautious by quarantining so many players who are vaccinated, boosted, tested positive, but probably asymptomatic or have mild symptoms. And here we are in late December 2021. You have always been one, Zach, who has been, you know, not shy about criticizing the NBA or the other leagues when they have been lax in any area. And there's something about that I want to get to in a minute. But your message today seems to be that in general, you feel like the NBA is progressing in a reasonable manner based on where we are in the course of this this pandemic. So should they just drop the facade at this point? And I feel like it's almost a facade, and just say, you know what? We don't need to be signing, you know, Joe Johnson and these other guys from the retirement pool. We can just go on. These guys are mostly vaccinated and boosted and are asymptomatic. Is it even reasonable to run a league this way? Should we be going the other direction?
Sure. Well, let me start by saying it's not important to identify just symptomatic cases. It's important to identify asymptomatic cases as well, because we know people with asymptomatic cases, they on average will tend to have lower what are called viral loads, and they'll shed the virus and transmit it to other people less, but they are still a source of a lot of transmission because they are so common, right? If most people are asymptomatic, most spread is going to come from asymptomatic cases. What does a test let us do? Let's think about the value of that. It lets us diagnose somebody with COVID. Okay, if you have COVID symptoms that are severe enough to merit treatment, we're going to do that. We're going to test to figure out what you have, and we're going to treat you. We don't need the NBA to be doing that. That's not the NBA's goal, right? If you show up in a hospital with COVID symptoms, you're going to get a test. We're going to figure out what it is, and we're going to treat you appropriately, right? The purpose of the NBA doing COVID tests is not to identify what a symptomatic person is sick with. It is to identify cases so we can isolate them, so we can stop them from spreading it to others. So in that sense, I really don't, leagues are focusing on this asymptomatic talking point because it sounds good and it's not really that relevant. They're saying it's relevant in the sense that, look, most of our players are having good outcomes, so we're not worried about it moving through our population. That's kind of the piece that's unsaid with that. But not testing for asymptomatic people, like asymptomatic people are still probably doing most of the spreading. So you're acknowledging that you're going to allow it to spread. Just testing symptomatic people is not going to stop spread. That's what I want to clarify. Yeah. That said, when those two goals are in tension, and with what we seem to be seeing about the reduced severity of Omicron, I understand the desire and the push to use less disruptive measures. Where I will criticize the NBA, and you can correct me if I'm misunderstanding about this, but some of these enhanced protocols that they're talking about, like indoor masking, aren't even taking place until after Christmas. To me, that is absurd. Why did you not do that last week? Why are you waiting to institute these non-disruptive measures that you know are going to slow the spread? Now, I don't think they're thinking this way, but the only explanation I can think of is that you're kind of hoping a little bit that the virus spreads through basically everybody and you're done with this and it burns itself out. Otherwise, why are you not mandating indoor masking? That to me doesn't make any sense. Why you have to wait. And the explanations that I've heard, like, oh, we baked in after Christmas revisiting the protocols. You have to stay flexible. The NFL talks about this all the time. This is an emergent situation and you should have done that. So that's the one really strong piece of criticism I do have for the NBA right now.
Well, all right, let me pick up on that, Zach, because I alluded to this a minute ago. There was something else I wanted to get to here. There's a couple different tracks that the NBA runs on here, right? There is protecting our own community, players, coaches, staff members, people who work in arenas, all of that, and how we are going to conduct ourselves, who we test, how often we test them, they mandated vaccines for those they could mandate them for. In the case of the players and the referees, they had to negotiate. The players the referees agreed to 100% vaccination as a mandate. So the refs were fine. The players resisted that, but most of them are vaccinated. Okay, so there's that part. But the NBA is not just a workplace. It's an entertainment vehicle that invites thousands and sometimes tens of thousands of people into public spaces indoors on a regular basis. This is where, and I'm not the sports epidemiologist, so I have much less standing on this, but just as a citizen of the world and a person who covers NBA games and is in these arenas, this is where I think the NBA is falling far, far short. And if I'm wrong, tell me. I don't want to lead the witness too much here. You're already shaking your head, so I guess you agree with me. The NBA, every night I've gone into an NBA arena, and I've only been to games so far in New York and San Francisco, both New York teams and San Francisco, but I watch a lot of League Pass too. Fans aren't wearing masks. If they are wearing masks, they're wearing them on their chins. There's no enforcement of mask mandates whatsoever. Although I will say, Chase Center in San Francisco, when I was there in mid-November, was very good about when I was out on the concourse at halftime, trying to find a friend, trying to find somebody who I've never met before, but somebody I know. And so I had my mask off so he could find me. And a arena usher walked by and just kind of pointed to note I should put it back on. I'm like, okay, sorry, put it back on. And I'm sure vaccination rates are very high in San Francisco. But what I'm seeing, Zach, on a nightly basis in the NBA is that fans do not wear masks or wear them badly. And it includes the fans who are very close to the court. Now, those fans, whether it's players who could spread it to them or the fans spreading it to the players, I think there's some vaccination requirements. I don't have this for sure. I think there's some vaccination requirements for X number of rows closer in proximity to the court. But in general, we do not know what the vaccination status is of thousands of fans entering these buildings every night, and they're not being required to put on masks or keep them on during the course of games. And the only arena that has reduced capacity in the wake of Omicron is in Toronto, and that was a government decision, not a team decision. So my question to you, as responsible as the NBA has generally been, as much of a leader as they have been and continue to see themselves as, are they failing when it comes to protecting their own customers? It feels to me like they have just given up on that part of it entirely.
Yes, I think that's a great point. And I should not have said earlier that my only criticism of them was the slowness on the indoor masking issue, because that's going to make this seem like it's an afterthought, and it's not at all. I have major criticism for any indoor sports league venue that is not thinking about reducing capacity or reinstituting a mask mandate. And realistically, that means stopping concession sales. I'm going to be honest with your listeners for a minute. I went to a Hawks game last month. I took my statistics and sports class to a Hawks game last month. I got myself a 25-ounce adult beverage. So that's the most economical way to enjoy an adult beverage at the game. And I took my mask off for most of the game to enjoy said adult beverage. Probably wasn't a great move, but things looked better back then. I would not go to a game now with Omicron at all. Not until I see what happens with cases. So I would love to see some capacity restrictions and indoor masking and temporarily stopping concession sales. And yes, that's going to be a financial hit, but I do think it's a reasonable price for a league to pay, which operates in a broader society. And if they want to say, look, we're not going to test our players, we know that's going to contribute to some spread in the community, but just the scale that we're talking about here isn't a giant public health threat. But we are going to acknowledge that the fans that we're bringing in that could generate a bigger public health threat, particularly with the much higher transmissibility of Omicron than earlier variants. I would really encourage them to do that. And I would respect that very much if they did. And I would certainly be recommending that.
Yeah.
The realistic read is they're not going to do it unless they're pushed by local governments. So I don't think we're going to see it most places, but I would like to see it.
Yeah, it's just I this is the part that I struggle with the NBA. Like, I, you know, obviously they have been a leader in so many ways, and I think they have done the right messaging. But, like, you know, the PSAs that they were putting out in the, you know, midst of you know, when vaccines were first coming out, and they were showing NBA legends and NBA coaches and current NBA players getting their shots and everything, like, all that stuff seems to have faded away. They don't seem to be as concerned with being a leader anymore, I have to say. And I feel like they are just trying to get to the point where we could just, like, you know, just move on, right? Like, that's what it feels like the NBA, they went from being the first to shut down and the first to, you know, not, they weren't the first to create a bubble, but among the first to do the bubble and taking all these very extreme measures and trying to be a leader to, it feels like saying, okay, we'd like to just kind of move on with our lives now, get back to normal and get our rosters back. And they're not, you know, they're not requiring really anything of the fans. And I, like, to me, that's actually the bigger part of this. It's fine to protect your own employees and your players and everything, and it's fine for them all to mostly be vaccinated. But to me, the bigger issue, and the one that they don't seem to address at all anymore, is how they're treating the people in their buildings, is their fan base. And that part of it, you know, if the concern is community spread and, you know, how to mitigate that, it just feels like that's a failure right now. And one that they just don't even, their heads are in the sand. They don't even want to discuss it. Like, you tell me, would the following things be, you address some of this, but would the following things be reasonable? Require all fans coming into buildings to be masked, but not only that, shouldn't they be, as some cities do, but not nearly all in the NBA? Why not require vaccination proof to get into an NBA game? I mean, are those reasonable things to ask of people right now? I don't know what that would do, especially
yes.
in
Next
certain
question.
Parts of the country. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
100%. Yes. I support any and all vaccine mandates.
Yeah.
Look, we should try to educate people. We should listen to people who are concerned. I am always happy. I have an open door, open DM policy. Find me on Twitter. I am more than happy to answer any good faith questions that you have. But at the end of the day, this takes all of us. And we should be mandating vaccines for anything and everything we possibly can. That would help protect people. But more than that, I do think we need to be looking at case numbers. And when we see a wave coming, we see that we're at the start of one. Let's draw back temporarily. Let's see how Omicron shakes out. Let's make sure that we're actually decoupling from this hospitalization spike. Let's make sure that we're not going to overwhelm our health systems. And let's make sure that we're just going to end up with what we would probably call a seasonally endemic virus, meaning like cold or flu. So there's a more or less expected level every year. It varies over the course of the year, right? It goes up in the winter, it goes down in the summer, just like all respiratory viruses will. But we kind of know what to expect mostly year to year. Sometimes with the flu, we still get what epidemiologists will call an epidemic flu. That just means higher than we would normally expect. That's all epidemic means, yeah. Right? Technically speaking, is a higher level of disease than we would expect. We can deal with that, but let's make sure that we understand what we're signing up for. And I don't think we're quite there with Omicron. That's why we need to focus on effective, but not massively disruptive steps.
The other thought I had was just reducing capacity, of course. And, you know, is that still a reasonable mitigation measure? And again, I know there's logistical as well as economic, you know, concerns there if they were to do it. But should the NBA be restricting just sheer numbers in their buildings right now? Would that help?
Yes. Fewer people in the same volume of space means fewer people who have the virus and less virus in the air and less ability for it to translate. It's not rocket science. So they should absolutely be considering that. I would say just for a month. In a month, we're going to have a much better idea of, in this country and in the specific markets where NBA teams operate, how are hospitalizations going to follow case spikes? And is our healthcare system prepared for that? If our healthcare system is prepared for that, I do think the argument swings a little more back towards personal responsibility, where you get vaccinated and boosted, you can hopefully access rapid tests more cheaply with the administration announcement this week. you've got the ability to protect yourself. We should institute as many mandates as possible, but at some point we do have to move on and live with it. But Omicron has generated enough concern for me that I just want to take a minimal pause, some common sense, not majorly disruptive steps, just until we're sure that this isn't going to bring our health system crashing down on everyone's heads.
Yeah.
Right. I know people who need surgeries. I'm hearing about surgery starting to get delayed. That really scares me. Okay. We don't want to put ourselves in a situation like that stupidly. We're not going back to March 2020. People who say, you know, no lockdowns. We never had a real lockdown in this country, but we definitely haven't had anything approximating that in a year and a half. We're not going back to that. So please stop using that as an argument. Yes. And let's talk about specific interventions that you like or don't like. And I think we'll find that there's a lot more common ground than people on social media or people yelling on cable news would have us believe. There are a lot of steps that everybody across the political spectrum and the social spectrum is going to agree on.
Amen. A couple more before I let you go, Zach. I want to just touch on Kyrie Irving briefly here, because the Nets had made a decision early on that because the New York law was that he could not play. He could not be inside Barclays Center or be inside Madison Square Garden. So he couldn't play home games. They decided, well, it's too disruptive to have him play just road games. Now they get, you know, the roster gets ravaged, and so they have made a concession to bring Kyrie Irving back. The first thing that happened was Kyrie Irving went into protocols, which seems to indicate that he's positive for the virus. So it raises an interesting question here, though, which is, if Kyrie Irving comes out of this having gotten COVID-19 and now has developed antibodies, you know, the NBA... You know, it's not an NBA rule that he couldn't play at Barclays Center. That was a New York City rule. I don't know. Like, I don't think New York City has an exemption for, and maybe the new mayor will make one, for somebody who has survived COVID and now has antibodies. And that's, I don't want to get into whether that's as good as being vaccinated or not, but it does put him in a different place. What do you make? I guess just in general of the idea that maybe Kyrie Irving could play the rest of the season, even home games, because if he has contracted COVID and now has antibodies, if that's, as you know, more or less as good as being vaccinated, is there a case to be made, whether it's, this is to the case to the New York City government or whoever, that Kyrie Irving should be fully eligible?
Well, I'll have to leave that to virologists and physicians and health authorities to really answer with any detail. I want to be clear, though. It's not really clear how vaccine-induced immunity and infection-induced immunity stack up against each other, especially when it comes to Omicron. What we do know is that it seems like a combination actually generates the best and most durable immune response. That is not to say people should go out and get infected. That is not what I'm saying. But I would feel great about Kyrie if he got vaccinated a little bit after this. I don't think he will, but that would make me feel really good about him. Natural immunity, certainly you're going to have some antibodies. Like, we can't say it does nothing. It definitely does something. But there is some data to suggest that vaccine-induced immunity is a little bit better, a little bit stronger, that a combination really leaves you the most protected. So I would be encouraging everyone to get vaccinated and then boosted as soon as you're eligible. And hopefully that will leave you with durable immunity. But you know, we'll have to see what the case is with Kyrie. Maybe you can measure his antibody titers and try to make an individual case or something like that. But I'll have to leave that to people who are more expert on that topic.
Sure. Yeah, it's just an interesting one. And it was something that a couple people had hit me with on Twitter in the last couple of days. And so I thought that was worth throwing out there.
He's going to be more protected than he was before he got the virus.
Sure.
Is he protected enough that you can treat him as comparable to a vaccinated person? That's where I'm not so sure where the data is. Does that make, yeah. I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yes. And then lastly, just this, let's just get into the realm of speculation a little bit here. You know, I know the trajectory of this, this virus and this pandemic in general is ever changing and unpredictable and foolish for us to try to see the future at all. But I do wonder, given where we are right now with vaccines and boosters and antiviral pills that are coming online soon, with respect to the NBA, obviously with respect to the society at large, because that's the bigger issue here, but just with the league, how close are we to normalcy, you think? Like, where are we maybe 6 months from now or start of next season, do you think? If you've any sense, and again, maybe that's it seems like an impossibility, you're already shrugging your shoulders, but I go back to where we opened, which is that Adam Silver's messaging to Malika Andrews on ESPN the other night seemed to be indicating a return to normalcy, this philosophical shift, and how that plays out as a practical matter, day-to-day, policy-wise, eligibility of players, mask wearing, how you deal with fans coming into buildings and all that stuff. I don't know exactly what Adam is indicating on that, but he is definitely signaling a shift. And again, he even said, we were leaders at the beginning on how to deal with the worst of this pandemic, and we want to be leaders at this point too on how to come out of it. So I don't know what that shape that takes, but I'm curious if you have any sense of, you know, where we might be in 3, 6, 9 months and in terms of returning to normalcy and the idea that this has now become something that we just live with.
Boy, I sure hope we'll be in a better spot than we are right now. But the only thing this virus has taught me about making predictions is don't. Right? If you had asked me 2 months ago, where are we going to be now? I'd have said, we might see a little seasonal spike, but we'll probably be fine. And then Omicron came off the top rope. I don't want to say that we didn't see this possibility coming, because the scientific community absolutely did. But the fierceness and the ferocity with which it could move through people who were vaccinated but not boosted, I think that was a little surprising. That was, in statistical terms, a little bit of a right tail outcome in terms of one of the worst things we could have foreseen. So could another variant arise and set us back a little bit? Yeah, it certainly could. And what we need to do to prevent that is be vaccinating as much of the world as we possibly can as quickly as possible. By some estimates, it would cost about $50 billion. That's a rounding error to Congress. Forget negotiating with the international community, right? Where is that money? Find the money. Yeah. $50 billion, that's nothing for the return on investment. So let's do that as quickly as we possibly can, because every person who gets infected is a chance for the virus to replicate. And that is a chance for the virus to mutate. Fewer chances you give, lower possibility we get another variant that could be deadlier this time. Deadlier and more transmissible, deadlier and less transmissible. I don't know what's going to come down the pipe. You know, if we don't get another variant of concern, then I suspect, going into the spring and summer, we'll be looking, hopefully, lower level of cases than we've seen in a very long time. And it will stay stable, especially with the general seasonal patterns for respiratory viruses and people moving a lot of activity outdoors because it's warmer. That would be my hope. But that could always change on a dime with new variants or something else like that. I do agree with the NBA and what Adam Silver said about trying to chart a path forward, right? We can't stay stuck in old ideas. We shouldn't be doing the same thing we were last year. Literally no one, I've heard literally no one suggest the NBA should go into a bubble. So we're not where we are last year. Anybody who says anybody's advocating for that, that's a straw man. Nobody's advocating for that, right? So we do need to chart a path forward. What that should look like is still a little uncertain, and there's a lot of room for reasonable debate and disagreement. But vaccines, indoor masking, where the cost of that masking is very low in terms of economic or educational outcomes, and making rapid tests available and cheap. These are all good steps that we can take that don't result in massive disruptions. We shouldn't close schools and keep bars open. I believe it's my colleague, Ashish Jha, who said something, he's the dean of the Brown School of Public Health, who said something along the lines of, any district that closes schools while keeping bars open doesn't care about kids or COVID. Mm-hmm. And he's right. He's 100% right. Schools should be the last thing to close. And I really think a lot of the frustration over these control measures can really be, if you zero in on it, it can be brought down to a couple of things. And one of those big, big things is parental frustration as schools close.
No doubt.
And I agree. We need to do everything we possibly can to keep schools open. And I think that we can. but let's focus on other common sense steps. I hope the NBA will be leading the way in that. I am disappointed in the speed with which they are instituting an indoor mask mandate. I am concerned about them reducing the amount of testing they're doing. But on the other hand, it's hard to be too critical when you look at what everyone else is doing. But we also do need to be cautious that the NBA is a very unique population. Players in particular, young, healthy individuals, right? Personnel, a little on the older side, staff, a little on the older side, some chronic conditions in there. So we can look at what happens with them in terms of bad outcomes with the virus. But they're also an extremely vaccinated population. So they're kind of, I think, a best case scenario, right, for what we would see in the rest of society. So any path that they chart forward should probably be a baseline for the rest of us rather than, you know, the gospel truth of how we should all proceed. But I agree with Commissioner Silver's general thrust that we need to find a way forward and out that is minimally disruptive while not resulting in a whole lot of death and disaster.
Zach, the information, the discussion has always been incredibly educational for me. So thank you again. I think this is at least the third, maybe fourth time we've done this since this whole thing began. I always learn something.
Do I get a free sandwich yet? Or are you going to be sending out rings?
Punch cards or something, right? you should get a free crossover sweatshirt or something. We'll have to start making those first. I don't even have that. I don't have a single thing that actually says Sports Illustrated on it. I've got to get on my bosses for that one. But no, I appreciate it. This has been, as always, really informative, and I appreciate the everything that you provide there for our listeners. And for me, it's always an education. But as we said at the outset, let's hope this is the last time we have to do one of these podcasts. Or maybe we have a celebratory one at some point where when we declare the quote-unquote end-ish of this whole thing, and we could just take a victory lap and have a drink on Zoom or something. But
that's one of the things that I think really frustrates people, you know, is when is the end? Yeah. What is the end? Because it's not going to be clear. Everyone's ready for it to end. And it's going to be a little bit of a feel thing, but we should be tying these interventions to case numbers, right? And say, this is when we're going to have interventions and this is when we're not so worried below this threshold. I think that will give people an idea of what to expect and understand when certain things get turned on and off. If you let people know what to expect, I think they're a lot more receptive to things than when it just feels arbitrary. I think that's a lot of the frustration, but we also all need to stay flexible because we'll just have to see what happens. But I am hopeful that this is a bump in the road rather than we crossed over the horizon and just saw more road laid out in front of us. I do think we're going to be on the way out, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Amen to that. Next time I see you, maybe it'll be in person over a beer that I'm buying to repay you for all of your generosity with your time on the podcast. And we'll do that, meet up in Atlanta, have a drink and some good food, and toast the end-ish of something. Our return to normalcy-ish.
Toast the fact that we are now at a point where for the foreseeable future, we are at a stable, low level of disease that we can live with, yeah. Right? That's really the goal.
Yeah. All right, Zach, thanks so much again. Appreciate it. Be well. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely. You bet, Howard. Thank you.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Zach Binney for joining me. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston, and thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Go subscribe to the Sports Illustrated Podcast channel on YouTube and hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.